Hi, everybody. Welcome back to SOS.
What up, saucers?
What up, bitches?
We're going to disrespect the shit out of you today. Speaking of disrespect, did you know the art community
Perfect.
Is the most disrespected community in the face of the planet? We are going to be talking about that today. We have an amazing guest. Her name is Brooke Ishibashi. She is the co-organizer of Be an Arts Hero. And they are, and I mean, we'll let her explain it shortly, but it's amazing. And they do a lot for getting relief for the arts community right now because COVID really fucked our shit up.
Yes,
to
it
put
did.
It in a classy way. And yeah, and she's a very talented actress and comes from a fucking powerhouse family. And I can't wait for you guys to meet her and talk and hear this conversation. And so it's called Be an Arts Hero. Her Instagram is at Brooke Ishibashi, but it's at Be an Arts Hero, beanartshero.com.
We'll dive into it with her. And if anybody previous to this interview thinks that the arts are great, but they're kind of like an extra or something fun on the side, she's about to blow your mind with some actual numbers. So
about how important we are. And then just think about, like, if you're not, you know, an artist in any way, you don't consider yourself an artist and you're listening to this podcast, but, you know, and you indulge in things like this podcast, in Netflix shows, in your favorite musicians and their albums and Spotify or whatever, like, understand all those luxuries you're participating in, that you're enjoying, they're we're all at risk.
Mm-hmm. And it's tied so intrinsically to the economy of the entire country.
Yeah.
Outside of the arts alone. So, I mean, I can't wait for you guys to hear. We'll shut up so you can hear her. Let's bring her on.
All right. Enjoy.
Welcome, Brooke. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here with you both.
Oh, we are so psyched. I have the pleasure of knowing you for a while now, and I was introduced to you by my sister, and I'm so glad that I know you and that you are a part of this amazing thing called Be an Arts Hero. But before we get into all that, we kind of want to do like a little teaser about like the SOS moment that we're going through right now. So if you want to kind of like briefly kind of summarize like the issue we're going through as artists.
Yeah. Oh gosh, where do we begin? So, you know, since pandemic hit and since we've been experiencing this nationwide institutional shutdown, that's just domino effect throughout the nation, you know, it's had a very devastating toll on the arts and culture sector at large. And I think what's becoming very evident to all of us is that, you know, we are intrinsically tied to the health of the entire nation by proxy, you know, but simply because so many other industries are reliant on us thriving, right?
Yeah.
You think about, you know, we were just talking about the hospitality industry because all of us have worked in the hospitality industry in the past. You know, you think about how arts and culture is big business and the fact that we are a jobs multiplier. Transportation, tourism, hospitality rely on us. So this moment we're living in right now, we're realizing, oh, holy Lord, like with arts and culture imploding, we have a domino effect that's just taking down other industries now because we're all just so reliant on this ecosystem that we're all a part of together.
It's so true. And I feel like it's also not, you know, of course, artists are aware of this but I feel like a large part of the population isn't aware of how strong that connection is. Like, you know, even if you link it to hospitality, people going out to eat, people going out, they're going to a concert, they're going to a basketball game, they're going to a movie. It's like, and then, you know, now in the pandemic, more than ever, ironically, everyone's relying on Netflix and music and yeah.
Well, I want to know what, like, more about you too. I want to know how you got into acting and what drew you to the arts.
Yeah. So, long story short, I come from a kind of like the Japanese American Partridge family. So we're four generations of Japanese American artists, and On my dad's side, his grandmother was an opera singer. On my mom's side, her mother, who's 94 and in like perfect health, she was known as the songbird of Manzanar when she was interned at Manzanar in the camps during World War II, when the American government put hundreds of thousands of Japanese, anyone of Japanese ancestry into concentration camps. So she was coined as the songbird of Manzanar because she was the chanteuse who sang at all the camp events and such. And my parents are both entertainers. My sisters are both writer, performer, singers. And so there's arts in the blood. So it was something I knew. And I guess that's how I differ from a lot of my friends and colleagues in the industry is that I grew up only knowing this, you know, like my dad was an entertainment producer and promoter. So we'd be backstage at concerts with like, you know, Ray Charles and Bonnie Raitt and rock and roll Hall of Famers. And so we knew like what we knew was like show business from a very, very, very early age. Mm-hmm. So when we grew up, we were very much encouraged to pursue careers in the arts. And it was helpful having a family who understood the struggle of the struggling, starving artists, because there were years where we were, you know, we were flying high and money was great and business was great. And then, you know, my dad was an entrepreneur and he was working freelance for a lot of that time. So we knew what it was like to go through the struggles of what it is to be an artist who has to, you know, it's the gig economy, right?
Right. Yeah. I know. We know that very well.
And coming from a background with family who not only understands it, but sees the value in it and sees it as a legitimate, because I know a lot of we're all artists and we all have friends who are like, my family is supportive and yours is. And I know, Alyssa, yours is too. But I know a lot of people have families, they're artists and they have families that are like, don't see it as a legitimate thing.
Exactly. You know what's interesting, Molly, is that that speaks to a larger conversation that I've been having with all my friends with our Being Arts Hero movement, is that there's an ideology and a framework around what it is to be an artist. You know, I think that's a reason why we have historically gotten the short end of the stick when it comes to government funding, because we are looked at as, you know, kind of a superfluous luxury, frou-frou-frilly. Yeah, exactly. Extra. And that it's not a necessity. But we're trying to change the conversation now. So the narrative is, we are arts workers, we are laborers, and we are an arts economy. Because when it comes down to numbers, people can't argue with that shit, right?
Yeah.
You can't argue with the fact that the arts and culture sector contributes $877 billion in value added to the economy. And we're one of the largest economic drivers in the nation. So we're realizing that there's an area of opportunity for all of us to intrinsically tie our worth to a monetary value now. Whereas before it was like, oh, well, it's good for the spirit and we help heal people and it's feel good and, you know, we're artistically fulfilling. But now I think all of us can say, oh, this is who we are as arts workers. And so we demand our worth because our worth is intrinsically tied to money.
Yeah. Actual numbers. Like if you need to see the stats and the numbers of the value of this. Yeah, that's so important. And it's something that like, it's right in front of our faces culturally. Every single culture historically, as far as you go back, there's art involved in humanity. It's like more tied to us than capitalism is in terms of what our nature is tied to, you know?
And it's interesting too, because like obviously pre-COVID growing up, like I always wanted to be like my sister, so I wanted to be an actor. So like I loved it so much, but I feel like, you know, I mean, my school had pretty good theater program, but other than that, I felt like wanting to be an artist and pursue it in college and after, I felt like I had so little confidence still because of how, you know, you're going to be a server. You know, it's kind of that stereotype that I was like, no, I'm not. Yes, I am. Absolutely, I am. So now with COVID, it's like you really have to own who you are immediately. And it's hard, but an amazing test at the same time. I don't know, but it's something that I struggle with all the time, to find that like inner confidence to fight like you are, you know? So with that being said, I kind of want to get into like, well, how is COVID now? If people don't know, if people listening don't know, like how is COVID actually affecting artists right now?
Right. Well, I mean, it's a lot, right? So I think the struggle right now is that a lot of us don't see how bad the crisis is because it's not directly in front of our faces. You know, mm-hmm. we hear numbers on the news and we hear about friends of friends who are getting kicked out of their homes, et cetera. But for the most part, most of us are lucky enough to still have shelter, to still have food, to still have loved ones we can rely on if, you know, if the shit hits the fan. But for so many, for millions of Americans at this point, the shit has already hit the fan. You know, so when we're talking about, there's two parts to it. There's a humanitarian crisis that we're facing, and there's a systemic economic collapse that is, we're in the midst of it, and it's just going to get worse in both respects. Both are already, it's already happening, and it's just going to get worse. And what I've been saying to people is, you know, in the same way that COVID by now has touched all of our lives in some way, form, or fashion, if it hasn't infected you, it's infected a friend, a colleague, a neighbor, a loved one, et cetera. The homelessness crisis will be much the same if we do not receive federal relief. So CNBC is reporting that by October 1st, which is, gosh, like only a month and some change away at this point, by October 1st, if we do not receive federal relief, they're projecting that 40 million Americans could be evicted. So if you think about where we are now and what that number could represent, so right now, around 567,000 people in America are homeless. So within a month and some change, if we don't receive federal relief, that number could skyrocket and increase by 7,000%.
Wow.
To 40 million Americans. And 40 million Americans is 12 out of every 100 Americans at that point.
Wow.
Could get evicted. So at that point, it's like, oh, if it's not us, we're all going to know somebody who's getting evicted by October 1st. And that is, I mean, I'm just looking at the calendar right now. What is it? It's August 23rd. That's a little over a month away. And, you know, Congress is on vacation until Labor Day at this point. They're dealing with the USPS stuff right now.
But right.
They're not going to come back with any kind of fulsome bill until well into September. So that's 2 months' time then, August 1st and September 1st, when those rent deadlines, you know, came and went, and the first wave of evictions happened, and the second wave of evictions is going to happen. The moratoriums are all going to be lifted by then. It's just, it's a humanitarian crisis. And the really sticky part is, you know, it will disproportionately impact Black and Hispanic communities.
Yeah.
And as we all know, they are dying at higher rates due to COVID, you know, higher rates than anyone else. So it's a double whammy of, you know, 1-2 punch. They're already getting sicker and dying at higher rates than everyone else. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to be getting kicked out of their homes at higher rates than everyone else. So we're not giving anyone a fighting chance to survive at this point.
And a lot of these families they're obviously low income workers, which means blue collar jobs, which means the service industry, all of the things that keep the economy rolling. It's just massive shit pile.
Higher risk. They're all in higher risk jobs, you know, essential worker jobs, and they don't have a choice. You know, we talk about insurance also, and this is part of the reason why one of our asks is 100% COBRA subsidies is, you know, for arts workers and not just arts workers, our health insurance is tied to our employment. So at this point, you know, when there are millions of workers in America who are unemployed, they have lost, they are losing, or they're gonna lose their health insurance during a deadly fucking pandemic.
This is the most twisted. I mean, honestly, it's like, I feel like the face of this country, we had a mask on where everybody, you know, we thought we were the best. Everybody looked to us as a land of promise, and it's just ripped away and the ugly truth is being revealed. And it was always here, just below the surface. And now it's this just like crumbling mess of, and the irony of it all, bringing it back to artists too, is that in our society today, the way that we revere and worship money and material things, it's a celebrity worshiping culture, essentially, and most celebrities are artists. It's just this, it's so ironic, you know, because it's like there's the starving artist, there's most artists in the world are not celebrities, of course, but the whole point is all people ever do is worship music artists and actors and athletes. And I know they're not artists, but kind of in the entertainment industry, you know? And so this impact that it's having I like that you're bringing attention to the fact that it's an its own economy. It lifts up our national economy as well. It's its own industry. The numbers don't lie. It's a real thing. It's not just a supplement.
And I'm wondering too, I don't know if you know, like, what can, and this is for actors, like the unions, what can they do right now? Like Equity and SAG-AFTRA. I know like SAG-AFTRA is not doing that much
in terms of lobbying for what we need. You know, that's another tricky part of the equation is that we realized that everyone was advocating for themselves, which they should obviously do. But in doing so, it's almost as though we realized that we needed to provide a collective, like a unified front and a collective of sorts, because IATSE, SAG-AFTRA, WGA, Equity, everyone was advocating for themselves, using their own lobbyists to advocate for themselves. And in doing so, it's almost as though our efficacy was diluted, because arts and culture sector, you know, there's so many industries underneath the arts and culture sector. There isn't like a coordinated coalition of everyone, you know, banding together and demanding XYZ of Congress. And so that's part of the reason why we evolved and we sprung into fruition, is that we realized that we are more powerful if we all band together to collectively ask for what we need as an entire sector, because, you know, Equity is making their ask and they want $4 billion. And that's perhaps enough for Equity's stage managers and actors to keep their members taken care of. But at this point, you know, if we're not advocating for the entire sector, then we're just not going to get it.
No, you're right. Because then there's the music industry that I'm a part of has its own things that's trying to help its people, and it's valid things, but you're right. If you don't band together as all across all arts, because you're all needing the same support, things are going to get lost. Some people might get some help, some people might not. And then it's just becomes like, you know, it's like a whole, well, the musicians and then the actors, and then there's like the sculptors,
museums.
And you're right.
Yeah. Thing, yeah. So go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, speaking to the music portion of this, the conversation. So we're having meetings with senators' offices right now. And the common dialogue with a lot of them, and the GOP senators' offices are surprisingly more responsive than we ever thought they would be. They really? All are open to the conversation. They are interested in what we have to say, and they're asking us how they can help.
Wow,
which is very refreshing. That's and surprising.
Great. Love that.
But what we realized is everyone's now asking us, well, what about the Save Our Stages bill, you know, presented by Cornyn and Klobuchar? Mm-hmm. Isn't that enough? Like, what's wrong with the Save Our Stages bill? And these offices are asking us, like, why isn't that enough? Like, what else do you want to see happen? And the thing is, you know, and we, Neva, who's helming the Save Our Stages and advocating for it, you know, they're all so wonderful, but it is a Band-Aid to, like, a hemorrhage. You know, the idea that it's only taking care of the infrastructure of specific venues. Yeah. So, and it's only for a specific amount of time, like around 6 months time. So, so it's any relief is welcome. Like we want, we'll take the relief. We want it. Yeah, right. So thank you for Schumer and Klobuchar and Cornyn for crafting this and trying to get this, you know, trying to get this into fruition. But the troublesome part is, you know, it's just not enough. And also, what good are the venues if all the people who are working at the venues and, you know, lifting up the venues, if they're all like sick, dead, and homeless?
And like a lot of the industries, I'm thinking of music, of course, like live performance is a massive part of that industry, but it's also the behind the writing, the recording sessions, all of these things that aren't happening on a actual stage in a venue that needs saving.
And it's, careers that are halted because live performances are the, you know,
right.
How you expand.
Exactly. It's kind of it all speaks to this, the bigger holistic issue that we see is happening right now, that we need to keep our arts workers alive. We need to keep them in their homes, and we need them to have jobs to return to when the crisis is over. Yeah, and for us, it's as simple as that, because, you know, we want to, in order to reform these institutions in this time of systemic upheaval, the institutions like need to survive. Right.
Yeah.
And because if anything, if you want these, you know, there's a whole burn it all to the ground ideology, which I can completely get behind in so many ways, but then what happens to the thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs when those institutions just burn to the ground?
Yeah. It's this mentality that everything is separate that is going to hold our country back, because at the end of the day, it's like, well, do you fight for the arts, or do you fight for education, or do you fight for, it's like, do you understand how everything is so interwoven, and we place value on like a scale of things, like, well, this is more valuable than this profession wise. But in reality, like you're pointing out, nothing can survive without the other. You can't just throw all your support behind one thing and then, but what's holding that up? Like you're talking about all the people that are going to be evicted first. Is all the people holding up these essential worker jobs? It sounds so logical, but nothing is happening.
It's the idea that you need to save the people on whose backs the entire sector relies. Because if Broadway comes calling, and we've talked to Broadway producers who are of the mindset that things are just going to come back in a couple months, so that they'll be able to like make a couple phone calls and be like, everybody back to work. But you're going to have people who are dead, who are sick, people who are living under a bridge. Mm-hmm. And we're partnering with the Costume Industry Coalition and so many of these folks who provide all of the costuming for every type of performance based out of New York and the tri-state area. You know, they're having to lay off all of their employees. They're having to shut down their warehouses because they can't pay their rent. So when Broadway comes calling, they'll be like, okay, everybody back to work. And it'll be like, disconnected. This phone is no longer in service.
Exactly.
All right. Well, you started getting into it a little bit, but I want to know how Bein' Arts, what Bein' Arts Hero is, and you kind of got into what you're doing, but and how it came about.
Yeah. So essentially, we are an intersectional grassroots movement, and we're emphasizing the arts and culture sector's $877 billion value-added contribution to the economy and the human and financial toll of letting that contribution collapse. So we're a sector-wide coalition of sorts, and what we seek to do is keep arts workers alive in their homes and with jobs to return to. So we wanted to provide that mobilizing effort, that unified front between unions, blue collar, boots on the ground, arts workers, celebrities, little institutions, big institutions, like everyone who's underneath the arts and culture sector umbrella. Mm-hmm. We needed to mobilize all of them together so that we could all go to Congress with, you know, a unified front.
And we
evolved, Alyssa, because we looked around and we were like, oh, nobody's coming to save us. Nobody's still coming. Oh, it's like, it's been a week. It's been 3 weeks. It's been a month. It's been 3 months. It's been, you know, and nobody was coming to save us. So, I think that's the power of grassroots movements, right? Is when everyone realizes like, oh, we have more power. You know, I individually have a voice and I can use that. And what if we all use our voices together and mobilize? So that's how we started. And that's what we're about. And essentially we are asking Congress for five asks, but the top three asks are an extension of federal pandemic unemployment compensation until the crisis is over, because you know, they could do it for 4 months, 6 months, but like, if we all can't get back to work, what good does it do us, right? We need something to cover our arts workers. So extension of FPUC, 100% COBRA subsidies, and $43.85 billion in proportionate relief to the arts and culture sector. So that's for arts workers and institutions, etc. And the reason why it's that specific number is it's 5% of our value added as of last year. So we use that 5% because the airlines got the same 5%. And when they went and got their lobbyists to go to Congress, they were like, we're too big to fail. So you need to give us proportionate relief. So they got it. And so in essence, 10 U.S. airlines alone got $50 billion in the CARES Act. And we as a sector provide $265 billion more than all of transportation combined, like not just 10 airlines, not just airlines, like more than all of transportation combined. So the fact that they got $50 billion in the CARES Act
crazy.
And are asking for $25 billion more, and you know, we walked away with pennies. It speaks to that imbalance of, oh, we're not viewed as an economic driver. Otherwise, they would just be putting a floor underneath our sector to make sure we don't fail.
You're right. It's so, I'm so before, glad.
Like, where does that come from? Like, why is there so much disrespect to the arts community when we do? You said $877 billion, right?
Yeah.
That is crazy.
That's crazy. And so it's we're 4.5% of GDP. And when you think about as a whole piece of the pie, like 4.5% doesn't seem like a lot. But if you take 4.5% away, and if 4.5% is like billions, trillions of dollars, that is a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about, you know, what happens like if they let us fail and we just crumble and we knock down transportation and tourism and hospitality and everybody else who relies on us thriving. You know, we have to think about how that affects local jobs and local economies, because what we tend to think is like, oh, well, we don't need Hamilton. Hamilton's just frilly. It's just entertainment. You know, so if Hamilton goes away, it's like no skin off our backs. But you got to think about like cultural hubs. Like I always say Oregon Shakespeare Festival, because like Oregon Shakespeare Festival's health directly affects not just the city of Ashland, but the entirety of Southern Oregon. So like you're talking about, you know, thousands and thousands of local jobs. So if OSF fails, then and it's a $40+ million institution, then you're talking about gas station attendants, restaurant workers, hotel owners, grocery store clerks, people who, you know, regular folks, blue collar folks who are not arts workers, who will be devastated by OSF failing, because OSF needs to thrive in order for that entire community to survive.
I mean, and that's like, you know, Coachella, South by Southwest, all of these massive conferences or festivals, or, you know, it's as though we are taught to think that if you enjoy something so much, it can't be that important. And it's so bizarre, because it's like we think of it, if it's fun, so it's not essential, or it's fun, so it's extra. That is actually the way that we think about things, where it's like, oh, I'm going to this festival, music festival, that was a vacation, that was fun. Or I'm going to this rest, or like things that are fun are not supposed to be tied to financial value.
Well, I think it's like you have to frame it as, you know, not that we have to, but it's a form of therapy. It's a form of expression. It's an escape for people that are, you know, that were just laid off and they need to sit down and watch something to just get their mind off something, whether you're just participating or watching, you know.
Yeah, but if they view it as an escape and just something for therapy, that doesn't tie to the economy. That doesn't tie to like a number and an actual value when we are in the capitalist society that we're in.
Right.
And that's the problem, because everybody acknowledges, I love Netflix. I can't live without my binges. I can't live without this album that came out. It got me through my lowest point in life. And yet it's not being, the connection in our brain is not being made.
Yeah. I wonder too, Brooke, like, has it been hard to reach out to people to kind of bring your message to the forefront? Like, you've gotten some amazing people to talk, like Billy Porter, Jane Krakowski. Like, has it been easy to get people on board?
You know, it's yes and no. In a way, listen, Molly, like, we're realizing, oh, I don't think all of us really truly understand how bad it is and how bad it's gonna get. Because for the most part, like, we're all doing okay right now. But what we realize in reaching out to celebrities, especially people of influence, people who are not immediately touched by this crisis in any kind of like fully devastating way, that most people have to be, you have to actually run, like, I had to educate myself. I didn't know how bad it was until we got like knee deep into this and then neck deep into this. And we were like, holy shit, everybody needs to know, like, there's a meteor hurtling towards Earth. And like, y'all got to like pay attention now, because we're only focused on like the fire in our oven, in our own apartment. Yeah. You're not looking outside, right?
Yeah.
So I think the issue is most of us just don't know how bad it is and how bad it's going to get, because like, it hasn't gotten to the point where we're like, it's like
evicted. Yeah.
You know, exactly. It's like what's happening in Hong Kong right now with, you know, citizens versus the government and riots and deadly protests. Like, that will happen here if we don't take care of this problem that's just like getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So when you ask, you know, has it been hard? It's hard in that everyone is so focused on just surviving right now. You know, everyone is so focused on like, and celebs are getting inundated with donate to this cause, you know, give your time to this, blah, 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 blah. And so it's really hard to cut through the noise right now, because most people just see this as, oh, you're just advocating for the arts, luxury. I don't have time. I'm focusing on BLM. I'm focusing on the major issues that are integral to, you know, reshaping our country right now. And as we should be. But what we're realizing is this is just as much a part of that fabric, because what we're advocating for is trying to correct those imbalances. So when we're navigating the systemic upheaval and trying to correct all of these imbalances in society right now, you know, if 40 million people, largely Black and Hispanic people, are going to be evicted in the next month and some change, you know, that is speaking to this imbalance that we're all trying to correct right now. So why aren't we paying attention to that, you know? And so it is hard because so many people are just so stressed, and just, it's really, really hard, I think, to wrap your brain around all the things that are going wrong in our nation right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, it starts with just having a conversation and just getting in the door. And then I think once we're able to like give our pitch, then people are like, oh, this is why we need to pay attention to this now before things get worse, before this humanitarian crisis, you know, projects us and hurdles us into like third world nation status, you know?
So, and I guess it's kind of leading into that, but moving forward, like, what can we do now, listeners and us and people who aren't obviously celebrities with influence like that, or people of Congress, but it's like, in general, what can people do now to become an arts hero like that?
There's so much people can do. I think that's what we were speaking to earlier, right? Is that I think it's the same with voting. People are like, my vote's not going to count. I'm not going to show up. Mm-hmm. There are all these reasons why I'm not going to show up. You know, I'm stressed. I don't believe in it, blah, blah, blah. But what we realize is, oh, everyone can contact their gosh darn senator. Everyone can tweet at them, tag them in a post, post one of our graphics, you know, use our simple little action network templates and just put your name and your zip code in and send a letter to your congressperson directly. Everyone can call. We give them give people a call script to follow if you're phone shy, you know, so we're providing people with tools to communicate as much and as often as they can with their senators.
Yeah.
Because at this point, you know, we've still got another couple of weeks until they're back in session to hopefully pass some sort of meaningful legislation. So we have an area of opportunity to make a lot of noise, to voice what's going wrong and what we need to have happen. And what is reaffirming is, you know, hopefully with a change in administration come fall, we have the ear of Biden's Arts Council. So we're realizing like there's an area of opportunity for everyday citizens to make their demands known and to be really loud about it. And I think sometimes we get disenfranchised and think like we don't have that power, but we really truly do. So it's really as simple as like going to beanartshero.com and just finding all the easy ways we give you to contact your senators today, tomorrow, the next day, all, you know, up until we get this bill passed. And we also have a day of action coming up on Monday, September 7th on Labor Day. Okay, and so we'll be posting information, sharing that all over social media, so people have easy ways to engage and participate. And we'll have nationwide events. So, you know,
can't wait.
Yeah, people have ways to engage. I think we just have to realize like, oh, it takes a minute. Like
it takes a minute.
Yeah, just tweet a tweet.
And
just
like
tag.
How important it is. If you think it's like you've got, you know, you've made very clear, if anybody listening, like if you think it's a separate, oh, it's a luxury issue, the arts, blah, blah, blah. It's obviously very interconnected.
I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, like it can't be.
I'm so grateful that you're doing this, and I'm even more grateful that you came on to share about it and spread to our listeners and to us, because that's a grassroots campaign. That's how it goes. And
it's beautiful. And
we're going to rally the troops around you. Yeah, you're beautiful. Everyone get on YouTube and look at her face.
Inside and out.
Thank you so much for having us and for, you know, letting us amplify this message with you all and your listeners. You know, it means a lot, because we realize like, oh, that is what grassroots efforts are about. You just got to spread the goddamn word to anyone who will freaking listen. And then just keep going, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Brooke.
Thank
I
you
love
so
you.
Much.
Thank you.
Love you both. Yeah. Thank you for having us.
You too. I'm inspired and alarmed all at once.
I don't know what to do with my hands.
I don't know what to do with my hands.
Thank you again to Brooke. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. And please, please, please. We are going to be shouting this out a lot on our Instagram this week. In general, like I'm sure you've seen it by now anyway, if you follow our Instagram. But please follow at Be an Arts Hero to know everything that they're doing to this day. And then go to beanartshero.com too to call. And they have a script all set up for you to call your senators, because there's no way, after listening to all those stats on what we bring to this economy and what's at stake, that we can just be silent on this, because we need all hands on deck.
And you can feel good. Like for me, I like to know that somebody is out there doing something that encompasses all of the arts and culture. Like she said, there's a lot of people advocating for music artists and for actors and for theater and for museums, but they're all separate. Mm-hmm. And so you have to like pick one to support. But the fact that they're encompassing everybody to bring one unified ask, you know, is really powerful. And that is hands down the obvious choice. If you're like, who do I support in the art? How do I support the arts right now? I think it's a no brainer. And I know she mentioned it, but I want to just reiterate to everybody. So Be an Arts Hero is an intersectional grassroots campaign comprised of arts and culture workers, unions, and institutions in the United States, pushing the Senate to allocate proportionate relief to the arts and culture sector of the American economy. So to learn more and to take those simple actions, like she mentioned, it's super easy. Go to beanartshero.com and follow their Instagram, follow ours, because we're not going to shut up about it. And, you know, I want to say again a million times, thank you to Brooke. And
thank you.
Please follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the SOS Pod. On YouTube, search SOS with Molly and Alyssa. And you can see Brooke's incredible outfit from today. And here's to turning major, major national and world meltdowns into magic.